Today's episode of the Edge Conservation Podcast is brought to you by LA Motorsports, providing the premier stunt coordinators and stunt performance drivers to the advertising and entertainment industries. Welcome to the Edge Conservation Podcast, where we bring you the latest in innovation, insight, and effort on the front lines of wildlife conservation in Africa and around the world. I'm your host, Kira Dorian. Today, we are taking you to Namibia to speak with Stephanie Fennessy, co-founder and co-director of the Giraffe Conservation Foundation. Stephanie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Kira. It's great to be here online with you.
Now, I have to tell you, I am particularly excited about today's interview because of the giraffe is my favorite animal. And so I am super interested and curious about the work that you're doing.
Now, that's great to hear. I mean, everyone loves giraffe, don't they?
Oh, they're beautiful. And I remember when I was on safari in South Africa, I was just struck by what it feels like to come across a giraffe. It's not like any other animal because they're so majestic. That feeling just really, really stayed with me. And I've just loved giraffes ever since.
Yeah, I mean, we have been looking at giraffe for a few years now, and I still love seeing them in the wild. I mean, they're just so beautiful and quirky and odd at the same time, and just huge. They are so tall, especially if you're in a safari vehicle and get quite close to them. It's pretty amazing to see them.
Oh, absolutely. So let's just start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to work in conservation and co-found the Giraffe Conservation Foundation.
To put it very simple, I basically married into it. So my husband, Dr. Giudice, he is the world expert in giraffe conservation. So we met in the late 1990s. We both worked on a catchment study here in Namibia. I worked more on the community side, and he was one of the resident biologists, and he started looking at initially elephant and giraffe. And when he started his research, he just realized that there is lots of information out there on elephants, but there's nothing on giraffe. So whatever he did was new and absolutely new in the field. So he decided to focus his PhD on giraffe, and I was there from day one. I helped set up all the methodologies for his PhD, and we spent a lot of time together in the field. I mainly worked in Windhoek, but I flew or drove up into the field, which is about 800 kilometers from the capital, Windhoek, where we are based, and helped him do his research for his PhD. So, yeah, I've been there from day one. And, we developed a fascination, obviously, with giraffe. As we just said, they're just beautiful animals, and it's great to see them in the wild. And then we, over time, started to realize that not only is there very little information available on giraffe, but the numbers are dropping all over Africa, and no one really seems to pay attention. And that's when we basically decided to stay involved. And even if after he finished his PhD, we had to get some real jobs because you couldn't really earn any money with giraffe conservation at that time, we kept on doing giraffe work in our spare time. So we have been doing giraffe work since the early 2000s in our spare time, and only managed to make it our full-time job a few years ago.
Wow. Wow. So when did you co-found the Giraffe Conservation Foundation?
We were officially founded the organization in 2009, originally registered in the UK, but now we are registered in Namibia and in the USA, which has only been a few years.
Wow. And so for the start of all that, you were still doing this on the side?
Yeah, we did it all in the evenings, on the weekends. Basically, any holiday we spend doing conservation projects. And then we realized that there was not much money in it, but it was relatively easy to raise money for projects. So to do some field work, to go into an area and count the giraffe, find out how many there are, or take genetic samples. So we started raising money for that, but also at the same time realized we really needed a home for the money to go to, because you can't just say, please send me conservation money to my private bank account. And that's right. Why we initially started GCF in 2009. and it just went from there. And then I think I started being, I started volunteering full time. Though Julian had a quite well paid position as a consultant in 2013, 2014. So I stopped taking on other consultancy work and started spending more time working for GCF and trying to push the organization forward and find funding. And then in mid-2014, I think Julian got started to be paid, and he was the first ever person to work full-time on giraffe conservation in Africa.
Wow. Okay, I'm coming off of my list of questions here because I'm just so interested. So you're working these consultancy jobs. Are those in the realm of conservation, or is this just like a day job?
It was a day job, but in conservation. We are both. I mean, Julian is a biologist. His PhD is in ecology. I'm an environmental engineer. So as we said before, we met in Namibia, then moved to Australia because Julian is an Aussie and he finished his PhD there. He worked in land management, land conservation in Australia for a few years, and I worked for the Australian government. As you might be able to tell from my accent, I'm not Australian. And then we moved to Kenya, where Julian worked for the IUCN first and then for African Wildlife Foundation, while I did some consultancies for the UN.
Yeah, wow.
Some kids on the way as well. And then we returned to Namibia in 2010, both still working, Julian for the largest conservation NGO here in Namibia, the Namibia Nature Foundation. He took over the position as the director, and I did consultancy work just in the environmental field.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay, so tell us about GCF and the work that you do and the mission of the foundation.
Yeah, GCF is the only organization in the world that focuses solely on the conservation and management of giraffe throughout Africa. So we currently work in probably 15 countries, not always physically, but we support projects, we support partners there. We are a small organization, so it's Julian and me, and now we slowly start accumulating some staff on the way, but we are still very small, so working with partners is really key for us. We don't want to go into countries and reinvent the wheel. We just really try to work with local partners, with governments, other NGOs, researchers, and just encourage them and encourage anyone to put giraffe on the conservation agenda locally and also across Africa.
Fantastic. So what are some of the key threats to giraffe in Africa, and how are you working to mitigate those threats?
Just with most other wildlife, it's mainly habitat loss, habitat fragmentation, habitat degradation, illegal hunting in some areas, disease. There is just less and less space for wildlife in general, including giraffe. There's more and more people and less space for wildlife. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Somehow with giraffe, no one really paid attention for a long time because people just always assumed they're everywhere. Because when you go to big conservation areas, to big national parks, you will always see giraffe. They're quite prominent then. They're normally quite easy to spot. So people just never really paid attention. But we now estimate that as a really good guess, there's probably about 111,000 giraffe remaining in Africa. Even at a conservative guess, there's at least 400,000 African elephants. So that's almost four times the number of giraffe. And everyone is worried about elephant, and very rightly so. But I really think it's about time that giraffe also gets some attention.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was doing my research to interview you, I saw this video on your website about GCF creating the satellite giraffe population, which was amazing. I would encourage all of our listeners to watch this video. It was so cool. So tell me, first and foremost, why creating that population was necessary. And secondly, please tell everyone about some of these creative strategies that you had to use in order to move the giraffes and create this satellite group.
So I assume you're referring to the recent translocation we did with the government of Niger, of West African giraffes.
Yeah.
West African giraffe is a subspecies of giraffe, and I think we'll talk about that a little bit later in more detail. there is only 600 of them left in the world. They're not in any zoo. They're nowhere else but in West Africa. And these 600 giraffes live in Niger. It's one of the poorest countries in the world, and they live about 60 kilometers southeast of the capital, Niamey. They live in a communal area, so they share their living space with local people. There is no other wildlife. Everything else has gone extinct locally. There is only people, their livestock, and giraffe. So the Niger government, the number of West African giraffe actually went down to 49 about 30 years ago. And the Niger government made a decision and said, we don't want to lose these giraffes. So, as I said, one of the poorest countries in Africa, so they needed some help. So they approached different conservation organizations and the EU, and they got some funding to look into how to save their giraffe. And that's when we got involved. I think Julian flew to Niger for the first time in 2007 to work on a national giraffe conservation strategy to really make a plan how to save these giraffes. And even then, already one of the ideas they had was to organize to establish a satellite population. Then it's not good to have all eggs in one basket, so to speak. So if something goes wrong in Niger in this one population, West African giraffe could go extinct. And that's reality. That's not trying to dramatize it or anything. So that's when the idea already started. But then it took a long time. As I said, 2007, I think he went first, or six even. And now late last year, we actually moved giraffe in Niger. So it took a long time to organize this, because moving giraffe is difficult, and it's also very expensive. Giraffe have to be individually captured. That means a veterinarian has to dart them with a drug. Then you need a roping team, some guys who run crazily with a rope and basically trip a giraffe to make it go to the ground. Then the vet has to inject an antidote immediately, because basically the drug that he injected previously is killing the giraffe. So the moment the giraffe hits the ground, the antidote has to be injected. Then we take the opportunity to take some measurements. Sometimes we put some satellite trackers on the giraffe to monitor them afterwards. And then they get up, and you need to get them into a chariot, into a trailer. Again, I'm not a horse person, but it's difficult enough to get a horse into a trailer. So picture a giraffe, tall, very strong, very long legs. These legs can easily kill you when they kick. The head, when they swing their heads, can kill you. So then you have to get the giraffe into a trailer, and then we transport them to a holding area, to a boma, where we kept them in this case for about 3 or 4 weeks, just to calm them down, to make them used to people. So we have to feed them in an area where there's not lots of food available for the giraffe. So we had to feed them, and then we put them on a truck in two groups of four. So in total, we moved eight and transported them for about 800 kilometers in areas where there's not really any roads. So it took 48 hours to drive, physically drive the animals to their new home and release them. So yeah, sounds very easy.
Yeah. Well, and in the video, there were all these issues around finding a vehicle that would transport them. And then my favorite part was that you practiced, right? So you had like a human run, and you practiced roping the legs. And I mean, it was just fascinating what had to be done and what creativity you had to use to be able to move them.
Yeah, because I mean, this equipment is not readily available, especially not in West Africa. In Southern Africa, there is a booming game industry. In Southern Africa, giraffe are moved quite frequently. Equipment is available. There's experienced game capture teams who do this on a regular basis. But not so in West Africa. They had never caught a giraffe. So we brought a veterinarian along from South Africa, super experienced guy that we work a lot with, Dr. Pete Morkel. And he then had to help us train the team. So together with our team, we had to train some local rangers to catch a giraffe. And it's scary. You have to have a little bit of a death wish. You have to be a bit crazy to run at a giraffe that is running, and you have to then trip it, and then you have to jump on it and hold it down. Once you've done it a few times, you realize it's not rocket science, but you just have to be brave and just get in there. And that's not easy when people do it for the first time.
Sure. And so what happened once they were released? How's that population doing?
No, they're doing great. They're going great guns. So we translocated two sets of four, so only eight. It's obviously a feeble beginning, but we hope to do a little bit more. But yeah, they're doing really, really well. They were translocated into an area where there's very few people. There's only Tuareg people who are migratory. They are moving through the area. Most of them had never seen a giraffe, so they were super excited to see them. And we did. We work closely with Sahara Conservation Fund to do a lot of work on the ground. So they did some community awareness before the giraffe came, and now that the giraffe are there, so the people in the area were really excited and they're very proud. They see them as their animals. So one of the giraffe, the day after the release, walked about 70 kilometers in a straight line, basically, into an area where there is no food and no water. So one of the local headmen got onto a motorbike and followed the giraffe and kept on then driving back 20 kilometers to have cell phone reception, and would phone our team and say, I know where the giraffe is. And so we got some people out there and basically pushed the giraffe back into the habitat that we thought was more appropriate. But yeah, that really shows how engaged the people are there. So, and now also we work with local rangers, and we have a PhD student from the Czech Republic who is doing some post-translocation monitoring.
And so what are you learning from this group?
I mean, the one thing we learned is that giraffes are just amazingly adaptable. Having them for about 3 weeks in this enclosure in the Bauma, they were really habituated to people, because also where they lived originally, they're quite used to living close to people. They live in and around people. So it was really easy to habituate them. And that really helped us during the long drive, that they kept calm, because you can imagine it's exhausting for the animals as well to stand in a moving vehicle, and the roads, as I said, are often non-existent, so it's not a smooth drive on tarmac. Yeah, and they're adapting really well, and we hope to do another translocation probably late this year, early next year, and hope to get the groups together and really have then a founder population to develop a second viable population of West African giraffe.
Fantastic. Now, I know you've done a lot of research into giraffe DNA and found some interesting results. So tell us a little bit about, I mean, I don't even know where to start with that. That's so interesting. Like, how do you study giraffe DNA, and what have you learned by studying it?
Yeah, it's actually a really, really complex issue. So we have been, since the late 1990s, actually, so for 20 years, we have been collecting DNA samples of giraffe to just learn more about them, because the project actually started with zoos in America who wanted to have a baseline to find out if their giraffe are purebreds or if there has been some hybridization in zoos. And they then realized there was just no baseline. There was no African DNA samples to compare them with. So they started collecting the DNA samples, and Julian worked with them, with that group, in the late 90s, early 2000s, when he was doing the research for his PhD, because they came to Namibia and wanted a DNA sample of Namibian giraffe. And but then the zoos quite quickly realized that there has been a lot of inbreeding and crossbreeding in zoos in America. So they kind of lost interest in the project. But at that time, we had some preliminary results, and we were really interested and realized, hang on, there might be more to this than anyone thought, because officially giraffe at the moment are one species and nine subspecies. So yeah, we have been collecting well over 1,000 DNA samples from all across Africa. We have now a genetics partner, a lab in Germany at the Senckenberg museum in Frankfurt who do all the DNA analysis. And please don't ask me anything about that. That's not my field of expertise.
Okay, I won't.
I let them explain it to me. But because I'm not a biologist, I have very good layman's terms to explain giraffe taxonomy now. So they found out that giraffe, they basically initially found out there's four different types of giraffe. And we didn't even intend to put any classification on it and say they're species or not, because I mean that's a forever discussion in all conservation fields. Are people clumping or are they splitting? But the research very clearly shows there is four different groups of giraffe and they are genetically very different. They split about 1.5 million years ago. That's a long time.
Yeah. Wow.
And this same group also works on bears. And the different groups of giraffe or the different types of giraffe are genetically more different from each other than brown bears and polar bears.
Wow.
And I don't think anyone doubts that bears and brown bears are two different species. So based on all these findings and comparing it with other literature, we now believe there is four different species of giraffe. And that obviously has massive conservation implications, because the IUCN, the Union for the Conservation of Nature, who has the red list, which says if animals are endangered, threatened, vulnerable, or whatever, they at the moment only see giraffe as one species, and they have listed giraffe as vulnerable. However, if now we split giraffe into four species, then some of these species would be afforded a much higher conservation status.
Wow, that's incredible.
Or threat status.
So I know that you also run one of the largest environmental education programs in Namibia. Is that right?
We do, indeed, yes.
Tell me all about it.
We have a program here in Namibia called the Commerce Environmental Education Program, which takes primary school children from Windhoek to the field for a day. They just go for a school day, which here in Namibia is basically an extended morning. And we take them to a national park, which is only about 20 kilometers out of town. And we take roughly 2,500 kids a year, and we have been doing that for 3 years now. The first year was a little bit slower, but we have taken, I think the head count is at 7,000 at the moment. We have taken 7,000 primary school kids into the field and shown them nature. And we do that, as I said, here in Windhoek. We target underprivileged schools, so kids who really have never been out of town, who often live in a township, and we take them to nature and show them how beautiful Namibia is. At the same time, we talk with them about the environment, about topics that they deal with in school, in the classroom setting, anywhere, like litter, water, saving water, pollution, the circle of life, the pyramid of life, all things that they deal with anyway. So the kids are between 9 and 11 normally. And and most days they also see some animals, and most days they see giraffe, not always. But and it will be the first time for them to often see wild animals out of books or TV.
Incredible. And what's their reaction when they see it?
Oh, they love it. I mean, when they see giraffe, it's just amazing to see the faces light up and they are so excited. Often then they start shouting and running and the giraffe disappear very quickly. So it's a good time. Main thing, I mean, we want to show them giraffe if we can, but that's not the main thing. We just really want to show them nature and bring them back to nature and say, look, this is actually on your doorstep and this is really accessible, even for your parents, because here in Namibia, it's very, very inexpensive to go to national parks.
Mm. So I want to ask a personal question, if I may.
Sure.
So you and your husband have been working together all these years. You have children who are growing up watching you do this work, and I would assume are just growing up in a conservation environment. I'm curious how this has affected your children, and then what insight that then gives you into how we educate this next generation.
Yeah, we tell them to become accountants and make money. So I'm the wrong one to ask.
No, that's amazing. I am an actor, and I tell my children the same thing. Like, please don't, yeah. Please don't do that.
Don't be silly. No, I mean, they obviously go on some amazing trips with us. They have seen some amazing stuff, and they're sometimes a bit blasé about it. I think for them, it's like when we did the first giraffe translocation in Uganda a few years ago, the kids came with us and they missed a couple of weeks of school because we just said, okay, they have to come. This is just too good an opportunity. And we didn't know if we would ever do something like this again. Now we do like 3 or 4 a year. So it's a bit of normality now. But we said to the teachers before, we said, when they come back, they can give a presentation. And the teachers are like, yeah, whatever. And then they did. And they were absolutely amazed. And to make matters even better, we had a film crew with us, a BBC film crew who did a documentary for BBC and PBS, where the English version, not the American version, but the English version was narrated by Sir David Attenborough, who says all our names. He says Molly and Luca, the names of our kids.
Wow.
I mean, that's bragging rights forever. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah, it's we realize how important it is to show kids how beautiful nature is and what there is to lose, because obviously you will only love and protect what you know. If you have never seen it, there is no way you have an interest in protecting it. So that's what we believe. And I think our kids have an amazing opportunity not only to see amazing landscapes, animals, and nature, they also meet some pretty amazing people, because we work all over Africa, as I said, with partners, a lot of local rangers, veterinarians. We have volunteers coming out from America sometimes. So they meet a whole range of people, and I think that is really, I think that is what makes people, that is what opens eyes and just shows you that there is a big wild world out there.
Mm-hmm. So then what would you say for those of us that are far away from giraffes or wildlife in that same way? What can we be doing? What can I do with my kids to foster that same love and appreciation and desire to protect?
I think it's important to see. So watching documentaries is obviously a start. I know zoos are a little bit controversial, but I think they have a very important role for people who are far away, who will never have the opportunity probably to come to Africa and see animals in their natural habitat. Seeing animals in zoos at least gives some appreciation. And then educate your kids. Don't let them just look at Facebook. Let them read. And I think that is something that I find very worrying at the moment, that people are just not informing themselves anymore. There is snippets thrown out on social media and people react, but no one reads anymore. No one really gets the full story. And it's always easy to build an opinion on a couple of tweets or Facebook posts without really understanding the full picture. Conservation and protecting nature is a very complex issue, and there is always a cost to it. There's people here in Africa who have to live with animals, which can be beautiful, but if it is on a day-to-day basis and if it's an elephant or a lion, is not always easy and pleasant. So try to understand the complexity of the issue rather than sitting and pointing fingers and trying to tell people how to do it.
Well, I love that. That is very true. So you have two programs that also I would think people that are far away can get involved with. You have World Giraffe Day and Adopt a Giraffe. So tell our listeners about that and how they can participate.
Yeah, we a few years ago, we looked at a calendar and said, there's lots of animal days, but there is no World Giraffe Day. So we invented it. And we picked the 21st of June, the longest day, or in our case, the longest night for the tallest animal. and just threw the concept out into the world. I mean, as I said, we are a small organization. We are based in Namibia. What can we do? But this concept was really picked up particularly by zoos and zookeepers across the world who started celebrating World Giraffe Day with us, which is basically a day to raise awareness for giraffe conservation, but also to raise funding. And that's how anyone can get involved. You can either donate, of course, or you can organize your own little fundraiser. I mean, people do anything from garage sales to bake sales and lemonade stalls, and educate themselves and then talk to their friends and family about giraffe and that they're in trouble and that they really, really need our help. So that is one thing that we have done. And through World Giraffe Day, we now always theme World Giraffe Day. We try to raise targeted funding for one program. So we have raised funding for a couple of conservation translocations in Uganda. And this year, 2019, World Giraffe Day, we are going to raise funding for Twigger Tracker, where we realize that there is still very little known about giraffe. And we don't really know in some areas where they move, how they use their habitat. So we want to equip at least 250 giraffe across Africa, across their range, with satellite units that we, GPS satellite units, that we can track their movements and can see how they use their habitat and maybe identify corridors, identify threats around that, and do targeted conservation actions for giraffe. This is pretty expensive. These units at the moment cost about $1,500 per unit, plus then another $500 for the download time, because the data is sent through satellites. Plus you have to get them on the animal. And again, for that, you have to immobilize the animal. You have to get it on the ground. You need a vet. You need a team. Often, I mean, the areas where we really want to do it are really remote, because there we don't know anything about the giraffe. We don't have to do it in national parks here in Namibia, where people see giraffe every day. We want to do it in areas where giraffe are often not seen, so that we can find out more about them. So it's an expensive program. So this will be our target for World Giraffe Day this year, to raise funding for this. And we don't do this alone. We work with really strong conservation partners there. We work with San Diego Zoo Global and the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute. And the other program you asked about is Adopt a Giraffe. You can adopt your own giraffe. Not really, but
I'm excited. I'm listening.
Yeah. So it's basically a program to engage people and to raise funding. At the moment, we have 6 giraffes up for adoption. These giraffes do exist. They live in our program area in the northwest, in the far northwest of Namibia, in a very remote area where they live wild and free. So our team goes out there, spends normally 2 weeks every month out there to do conservation research, to really learn more about giraffes. What do they eat? Where do they move? Who do they hang out with? We're trying to figure out the giraffe that hang out with each other. Are they related or are they just mates? So there's still so little known about giraffes. So 6 of these giraffes are up for adoption, which you can do through our website. And in return for your donation, we give you some updates on the giraffe. So every 3 months, we publish a report on the giraffe in the Northwest. And if your giraffe has been seen during that period, we'll write something about them and post a photo. You also get a certificate. And for the guardian, the higher tier adoption, you even get a personalized thank you video from one of our team members.
Wow, that's amazing. I love it. So I can have a little framed photo of my very own giraffe.
You can indeed.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Stephanie, thank you so much for being with us today. It was such an interesting conversation to have with you. Will you please tell our listeners all the technological stuff? So your website, your handles, how can people find you? How can, you know, they get in touch with you? All that good stuff.
Yeah, so the easiest way to get hold of us is through our website, obviously. It's giraffeconservation.org. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram.
And what are your handles? Oh, you don't know the handles? Okay, I'll look it up and I'll make sure it comes into this episode so people know. Thank you so much for your time and for your knowledge and for all the work that you are doing. It's remarkable.
My pleasure. Cool. Bye.
So for more information on GCF, you can go to giraffeconservation.org. And I did find out their handles. It is giraffe_conservation. I was looking for a quote for today's episode, and I think it's really telling that Stephanie mentioned that there's all this information about elephants and not much information about giraffe. And it was the same when I was looking for a quote. There's a lot of great quotes out there about elephants and very, very few about giraffe, but this one really struck me. It's from Joy Adamson. And she says, "Wildlife is something which man cannot construct. Once it is gone forever. Man can rebuild a pyramid, but he cannot rebuild ecology or a giraffe." Join us next week. Our show is produced by Eric Johnson, me, Kira Dorian, and Edge. Thanks for listening.